This revolution also requires the political and military leadership to understand the purpose and consequences of war and the risk that attach to any military action. On recent evidence, none of those attributes are present to any degree, and across the world, a risk-averse approach to warfare in all its forms has seeped into the corridors of power. That, in turn, will lead to an increasing dependence on IW as the perfect solution for fighting wars with no risk of casualties and at relatively low financial cost. But that is to seek the very silver bullet that history has shown does not exist. As David proved against Goliath, strength can be beaten. America today looks uncomfortably like Goliath, arrogant in its power, armed to the teeth, ignorant of its weakness.
What is your definition of information warfare, or IW?
Our definitions that we use to describe information and war are very old-fashioned, and we need to rethink all of that. But that's a trap that I've seen happen before in dealing with terrorism, for example, in the 80s, where people would write whole books trying to define the issue. Well, I'm not really going to do that because people can waste their time doing that if they want. I'm really much more interested in addressing the capabilities, the opportunities, and the challenges rather than spending 500 pages saying, what is this thing, which I think is not actually very helpful.
Now, the title of your book is The Next World War, Computers Are the Weapons and the Front Line is Everywhere. Yet as I read the book, it struck me that your definition of information, your dance around the definition of information warfare is fairly broad, and that, in fact, in your definition, it includes much more than cyberspace and computers.
Yes, because what I was trying to do was to frame the debate, really. And I'm not going to say, I mean, as you will know, the actual literature on this subject is extremely thin. And when I delved into it, you'd go and talk to different people, and they would say, well, it's this or it's that or it's the other. And I have presented the panoply and said, here is what's out there. Here is what the discussions are today. I mean, in my terms, information means the manage. What information warfare for me is, what do information systems allow you to do in different arenas, and what do we mean by warfare? So if you can take both those things in a fairly broad way. I mean, the military now have changed the words information warfare and now are toying with the idea of information assurance, because nobody likes to have a ministry of war. They always like to have a ministry of defense. Well, that's fine. But the military itself can't even agree on what this is, never mind anybody in the civilian sector. And I think what we will see, just in the same way as we did with nuclear strategy, we will see this debate begin to frame itself over the next 5 years or so as the nation states struggle with their identity, as cyberspace itself starts to take on a different form. And all of the things that are in here, you'd be able to take every single one of these chapters and write a book in its own right, I would expect. And I'm sure people will do that, and that's fine with me.
In your book, you describe a federal exercise, an American federal exercise, called Eligible Receiver. It was quite frightening, frankly, and I wondered if you would briefly describe it for me here.
Yes, this was an exercise organized by the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the summer of 1997. And the premise of the exercise was that a group of hackers employed by the North Korean government were tasked with preventing the United States from responding to a crisis in Asia. And 35 people from the National Security Agency were given the role of the North Koreans. And they deployed in four teams. They were given no information except that they had to prevent, wherever they could, America from responding to this crisis in this time frame. They went, they were given some cash, and they went to their local computer stores and bought some laptops. They downloaded hacks that were publicly available on the web. And then they started seeing what they could do. And they went into the power systems of many of America's major cities, Los Angeles, Washington, San Francisco, Oahu, New York and so on. And they left calling cards that demonstrated that they could have shut down those power systems. They also did the same thing to the 911 systems in those cities. So you could see that the power goes and people call 911 and there's no response because the 911 system doesn't work and you have chaos. And then, having done that, they then interrogated the Pentagon's own command and control systems across the world. And they went through 40,000 different computer networks, and they got root-level access to 36 of them. And they left, again, enough material there. They got inside those and were able to essentially roam free. And this caused chaos in the command and control of the Pentagon, and essentially would have stopped America going to war. So you had 34 hackers who did more than the massed might of Saddam Hussein's armies, than the Nazis in the Second World War, than the Koreans in the Korean War. And that is an absolute illustration of the power that information warfare represents and the threat that it represents in this age.
There seems a certain level of ambiguity in the book, and perhaps it's just my reading as opposed to your writing. But in the end, are you lamenting political spinelessness and suggesting that an unwillingness to commit troops is trying to use information warfare as a substitute for traditional war, for which I think, in your opinion, there is no substitute?
I think that I would say that's a very good question. I think that there are a number of things at work. One, I certainly think that political spinelessness is the norm, and that is a factor, as I discuss in the book, of ignorance of conventional warfare and so on. But I certainly also believe that war itself, which I have reported, covered, and seen at first hand, and have, as most people who have done that, I have no wish to either support or encourage war as a solution for anything. But it is important to understand capability and therefore understand under what circumstances you use the capabilities that you have. Now, information warfare represents tremendous capability. It represents an opportunity, it seems to me. Used properly, information warfare can prevent the kind of carnage that we have seen down the centuries. And so to that degree, it should be welcomed. But because there is so much ignorance about the capability and so much and so evidently a lack of willingness to address the issues raised by those capabilities, vide the Justice Department definitions of war, for example, I think we're ending up in the worst of all worlds. We're not prepared to commit conventional forces, although we have a lot of them and they're very powerful. And we're not prepared to take advantage of the opportunities represented by the information revolution that would prevent those wars happening but allow us to defend ourselves and prosecute war if that was the need. So we end up having opportunities that prevent the sort of carnage we've known but not being able to exploit them because we won't address them because they're challenging. So I think we end up absolutely in the worst of all worlds where we could be in a much better place.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
You've been listening to a TechWeb Internet audio report. Thanks for listening.